Hey guys, welcome to the Dark Light Podcast. I'm Joe.
I'm Jen. Today's episode will be on Richard Mark Evantes, Part 2.
Part 2!
The victim we first talked about is Sophia Silva. Part 2 will be solely on Sophia and the investigation.
If you haven't listened already, go listen to Part 1. Here's a slight recap of that. We go through Mark's life growing up and into adulthood. His mom falls in love with a man who is behind bars for the brutal rape and murder of fifth grade teacher Kathleen Sanderlin. We left off with the kidnapping of Sophia Silva.
She went onto the front porch where she wanted to enjoy her great pop and some homework, while a Ford Taurus pulled up beside her as she decided to grab the mail from the mailbox along her driveway.
That was where she got a rag forced into her mouth, then forced into the backseat of a Ford Taurus. And she would also be handcuffed.
After he kidnapped Sophia from the mailbox at the end of her driveway, Mark was driving recklessly into his driveway. His neighbor, Keith Rabba, was unhappy about this and wanted to speak to Mark. But Mark claimed he didn't have time and had shit to do.
Unbeknownst to his neighbors, Mark's business was much more sinister than they could ever imagine. He took 16-year-old Sophia, restrained her to his bed, shaved her privates clean, as he would with all of his victims, and then proceeded to rape her. After that round of torment was done, he would strangle her till he was left with her naked, lifeless body.
He put some of her clothes back on, wrapped her in a blue quilted blanket he found in his house. He would tie the blanket with rope in knots he learned from the Navy and put her in the trunk of his car.
Two counties, 30 miles away from his home, he would turn onto a small road. He parked the car, walked down a steep embankment into the woods. There he would get rid of Sophia's body in a creek of green, scummy water surrounded by poison ivy.
Mark would think this was the perfect location to dump his first young victim, but he was wrong. What he didn't know was just up the road a little bit further was a huge iron gate, a spot filled with semi-trucks that would work all hours of the night. This place was a building called Domination Growers.
Dominion.
Dominion?
Yeah.
When I said Domination last time, that's what you said.
No, you said Dominion.
Fuck me! Dominion!
The owner lived on the second floor, and a window that looked right out onto where Mark had parked his car and disposed of Sophia. Sadly, this night, no one would peer through that window. No workers would get a glance of the unusual car parked here. No one would be able to give the cops any leads as to what happened. Mark would not be caught this night. Phyllis Silva, Sophia's mom, comes home from work. She worked at Mary Washington's Hospital in Fredericksburg. She walked by Sophia's abandoned homework and grape soda on the porch. She went inside. She greeted Pam, who is Sophia's sister. Humberto Silva, Sophia's dad, arrives home from his construction job in Manassas.
Pam mentioned that she hadn't seen Sophia in a while. They went to check in Sophia's room to see if she was there. In her room was her backpack, house keys, makeup, and her wallet. Sophia would not leave behind any of those, but most importantly, her makeup. She was just getting very into her makeup as she was finally allowed to wear it.
Sophia had never left the house prior without letting somebody know where she was. Her sister was getting pretty concerned.
Something was wrong. The family put off this gut feeling they had, hoping Sophia would come home with some sort of explanation. When dinner was ready, Phyllis went outside and called for Sophia, when still, no response.
Phyllis started calling everyone she knew, hoping Sophia was somewhere. The family decided to eat dinner and anxiously wait 1 hour for Sophia to come home. After that, game over. They would report her missing. Sophia's dad drove every street he could think of looking for his daughter.
He drove up Oak Grove Terrace, which was an older subdivision with houses shoulder to shoulder. Her dad would ask anyone he seen if they had any sight of Sophia.
When arriving back at their home, with no sights of Sophia, the family made the troubling call to the Spotsylvania County Sheriff's Department to report 16-year-old Sophia Silva missing.
Sophia never had any behavioral issues. The family knew she wouldn't just run away. To investigators, though, she was named just another teenage runaway.
They did, however, place her into a National Crime Investigation Center and sent out bulletins across the states. Investigators just assumed that Sophia had ran off with a friend, and now she was too embarrassed to come home with all the commotion going on.
Phyllis had a friend in high places. She was friends with one Martha Smith, who happened to be the wife of Major Howard Smith of the Sheriff's Department.
When Phyllis called her to tell her about Sophia's disappearance and how the authorities were handling it, Martha called her husband and convinced him that this wasn't just another teenage runaway, and they needed to start looking for her, and they needed to start looking for her fast.
September 12th, a major search effort was completed with search dogs, divers, and spoke to everyone in Oak Grove Terrace neighborhood. National Center for Missing and Exploited Children were also notified. They sent out a fax alert to more than 6,000 law enforcement organizations across the U.S.
Everyone knew they had to search for her body, but they were hopeful that she would be found alive and well. The search dogs tracked Sophia's scent on her porch and followed it out to the mailbox on the street, and that's where they would lose the scent.
Around midnight that night, the search would be called off without a clue as to what happened to sweet little Sophia. A candlelit prayer was held for her at Fairview Baptist Church, where everyone would pray for her safe return. Posters would be put out in New Bedford, Massachusetts.
Sophia had traveled there lots before to visit relatives. If she had run away, this would be a perfect place that she would be familiar with. Maybe they could find her around this area if they were lucky.
Sophia would first appear on America's Most Wanted on Saturday, September 14th, 1996. Seven tips would come in from this airing. All were checked out to the fullest without any of it leading to Sophia's whereabouts.
America's Most Wanted producers were filming another show called Strange Universe, which had an episode featuring a remote viewer, which according to Wikipedia is the practice of seeking impressions about a distant or unseen subject, seeking with the mind, so basically like a psychic.
Detective Robert Jones and lead investigator Twyla
DeMoranville
drove to consult with the psychic. Though the sheriff's department had their skepticism about using this as a way to find out information, it would get her name and picture back out onto the media.
September 22nd, the Silvas' hearts were pounding when they got the news that a body had been discovered by hunting dogs in a bush near a small town, Lingnum. Soon, they would discover this was not Sophia Silva, but 20-year-old Anne Carolyn McDaniel, who wandered off from a group home for the mentally disabled on September 18th.
It was reported in the media that she had been found with duct tape covering her mouth, her hands and her feet were bound. The death certificate, that was a hard one, would say she was dismembered and set on fire. She would become the third murdered woman and the third open murder case in the past 4 months.
On October 17th, another body had been found in King George County. Captain Dempsey and Detective Karen Barnett and Detective Butch Norris would drive down to the medical examiner's office with Sophia's dental records.
The body was too decomposed at first to even comprehend if this body was male or female. But as they compared dental records, they would come to find that they have now found the body of 16-year-old Sophia Silva. She was dressed but missing her underwear, bra, socks, and shoes.
It was assumed that she had been sexually assaulted, but due to the amount of decomposition her body was in, they were unable to tell. Her cause of death was asphyxiation, and she died within the first 48 hours of her disappearance.
Since she was found near a barn, they combed the barn tooth and nail without any evidence leading to find if she had been held or killed there. At this point, they didn't know if her body had been dumped in this location or she had been killed here.
On November 7th, the school's students and faculty members planted a maple tree in honor of Sophia. It had gold angel pins with purple streamers and bows in memory of her. It was a community symbol for her. The Student Council Association tied a big purple ribbon around the tree.
They also went to give Phyllis a check from the Corland family and community as a token of our love for you and Sophia and to defray some of the financial burden you may have experienced, said Principal Gray.
On October 30th, 1996, Lieutenant Mike Timms stated that they have one prime suspect at the time. His name was Carl Michael Roche. Carl was a high school graduate who went into the U.S. Marine Corps when he was honorably discharged in 1973. On November 3, 1978, he was convicted in Norfolk, Virginia, for possession of stolen goods. A year later, he was found guilty of larceny of an automobile.
In Townsend, Maryland, he was also convicted of driving without a license. In October 1986, the Norfolk Circuit Court labeled him as a frequent traffic offender. In December, he was found guilty of trespassing, driving without a permit, and performing sexual acts in public.
In 1990 in Virginia Beach, he was again arrested for the indecent exposure and again in 1992 for assault and battery. Again, he was arrested for driving under the influence, selling an uninspected vehicle, failure to appear, and for being a frequent offender. In June of 1995, he was found guilty of two counts of misdemeanor larceny. In December of 1995, he was guilty in attempt to possess cocaine.
He received a two-year sentence with 2 years probation. He was awarded 5 years for good behavior and had to pay a fine of $701.05. He then was released, but not for long, that silly goose. On August 20th, 1996, he was sentenced to 30 days in jail and 28 days probation for driving with a revoked license.
He used a lot of aliases, such as Michael Roche, John Michael Roche, Mike Roche, John M. Rossi, Mark Anthony Roche, and John Ross. In December of 1994, he moved to Fredericksburg, where he had at least 5 addresses in a 2-year span.
At the time of Sophia's disappearance, he was living on the same street as her. On October 21st, 1996, a week after Sophia's body was found, he was arrested for shoplifting a video cassette from Kmart. He was released from jail on a $3,500 bond on November 6th. He was scheduled to be in court on November 14th.
Many suspicious facts about this man came up in their investigation. At the time of Sophia's disappearance, he was a self-employed house painter. He was working on a job which contained blue moving blankets and a lot of rope. The owners didn't know if there was anything missing.
Carl left that job early on September 9th and didn't come back to work on September 10th. A lot of people in the neighborhood claim that Carl sat in his silver and gray 1984 Dodge Caravan watching children get on the school bus and would even stop to talk to children.
His landlord, Charles Hudson, testified that around 2 weeks after Sophia's disappearance, but months before his lease was up, Carl moved out without notice and left all of his shit behind.
Carl was a drunk, and a mean one at that. When Carl was drunk one night, he allegedly told Charles that he knew how to dispose of a body so that the body could not be found.
Carl did not appear on his November 14th court date, so they did change it to November 22nd. The next day, 3 search warrants were served for the unlawful death of Sophia Silva in violation of Code of Virginia, 19.2-32 as amended.
One warrant was for Carl himself, and the others were for his Dodge Caravan and his former basement apartment.
Sorry, it says his former bassinet apartment.
It does, basement.
Sorry.
Holy. Specifically, human hair, animal hairs, pubic hairs, clothing fibers, carpet fibers, female clothing consistent with the victim, rope, moving blankets, and fingerprints.
During the search of his apartment, investigators pointed out to a blue plaid blanket on his couch that resembled the one found with Sophia's body. They left his place with a lot of evidence, including a pair of pink underwear, blue socks, a gray crate, a chip of wood from the door, and a piece of knotted black cloth.
Carl agreed to take a polygraph test, but backed out when the examiner was on the way, stating he wanted to talk to an attorney first. He was under arrest for failing to appear in court. That's when they informed him that his van would be searched in regards to Sophia's case.
In his van, they found hairs and fibers. Carl was in jail at this point, waiting for forensics to come back. He feared that he would be framed.
Robin McLaughlin, McLaughlin was analyzing the fibers when she called investigators, stating that the fibers from the carpeting and seat covers in the caravan match physical, chemical, and optical properties found on Sophia's body.
Carl was charged with the abduction and first-degree murder. The death penalty was off the table since there was no evidence that Sophia had been tortured before her death, and Carl's criminal record only included one minor violent crime. Carl was now facing 2 life sentences for a crime that he did not commit. Carl's mother was in shock due to the fact that she believed her son's innocence. It was also bringing up some bad memories due to how closely Sophia's case and her own daughter's case were.
19 years prior, her 16-year-old daughter Susie, Carl's sister, went out to a bar one night and never returned home. Her body had been found weeks later. She had been strangled with a rope. When forensic labs renovated, much of Susie's case was destroyed. It was an unsolved murder.
All right, so that is the end of part 2. And I know we told you guys that we were going to keep this 2 parts. But we lied because we didn't realize how much information was actually on Sophia. So we wanted to just kind of make this episode about her and just instead of trying to rush through it. So hopefully we will get this done in 3. But I haven't really like read forward in the book, so I don't know how much information is on the other victims, but there are more victims. So we will try and keep it in 3. But in the case that there's like a bunch of information about the other victims, it would be really nice to just be able to give them their own episodes.
Yes, that's a good idea.
Yeah, if there's enough information that we can find. The book that I'm reading for this is called Into the Woods by, let me just grab it here, just so you guys know where I'm getting all my information from. And he's like, there's so much more information in this book that I haven't even written down. Like, there's so many other suspects for her case and everything, but he was just kind of like the main one that popped. Yeah. And like, just so much more information about like Mark's life and everything. Like, there's so much. Sorry, I'm just waiting for Scribe to load.
No worries.
Just so I can get the author. Maybe I'll just Google it. Apparently it's a movie with Meryl Streep.
Ooh, I should watch that tonight.
Book.
Do, 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 do. Don't want silence in our podcast.
Oh yeah, do, sorry. Do, do. I'm, no, just,
I'm just
still
trying to help.
Okay, so it's Into the Water by Diane Fanning. So it's Into the Water, an astonishing true story of abduction, murder, and the nice guy next door by Diane Fanning. And she does a phenomenal job with all of her research that she's done on this. It's, like, incredible. You guys do have to go read her book.
Which is on Scribd if you
yes.
know what that is. And if you don't, it is an app where you can listen to audiobooks.
This isn't an ad, but I just no. really love Scribd.
No, I like it too. I've actually been trying to get people to sign up for it. And
yeah.
there's also a 30-day free trial, but you get the audiobooks, books,
podcasts.
There's legal documents. There's like
magazines and everything.
Yeah.
Newspapers.
Radio, I think. Was there radio?
I don't think so. Maybe. There
something.
Might be.
Something along
but
those lines.
But it is really good. Like, you guys should definitely go check it out. It's SC. IBD, Scribd. There's an R in there. SCRIBD. Yeah, you guys can find this book on there. It is a phenomenal, It's just a bunch of books that you can find so many things on. That's where I'm finding all my information for this. Anyways, thanks for listening to the Dark Light Podcast. Follow us on Instagram at dark.klight.podcast_.
And on Twitter at darklightpod1. You can email us at thedarklightpodcast@hotmail.com with any episode requests, stories of yours you want to be on an upcoming sequel called Crowd Chronicles.
We will see you next Tuesday, and remember to
keep your lights on!